The State Department has 5 career tracks for its Foreign Service officers. The agency has resources online to make it easy if you're a new employee to figure out which one is right for you. But the biggest hurdle to finding new officers could be one the State Department can't control. Ambassador Thomas Boyett, former U.S. Ambassador to Colombia, former president of the American Foreign Service Association, and founder of the Foreign Affairs Council, is my guest to talk about the next generation of Foreign Service officers. Mr. Ambassador, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program this afternoon. Is it getting easier or harder to recruit folks to come into the Foreign Service, sir?
Well, I think from the point of view of quantity, it's probably about the same. But my perception is that from the point of view of quality, it's getting more difficult.
What is driving that difficulty, sir?
Well, one of the things, none of us can escape our own experiences, right? And I think that the experiences of the federal government, federal employees, both civilian and military, in the last 2 years has been extraordinarily negative. I mean, the number, leave the politics out of it, but the number of things going wrong, whether it's the penetration of the IRS into the career levels by what are clearly political people, whether it's military officers cheating on nuclear exams, whether it's employees at the Veterans Affairs actually making false reports. It's just a ton of bad news out there, which must create an aura of a certain ineffectiveness in terms of the federal service, which wasn't the case 50 years, 60 years ago when I entered. And I think that in the long run, that's going to impact not just the State Department and the Foreign Service, but all of the agencies, all of the executive services.
Now, you and I have spoken before about some of the unique opportunities that the Foreign Service offers to try to overcome that. Is it your view that those unique opportunities are no longer enough to attract the really quality people? And I wonder what somebody who is a quality candidate for to become a Foreign Service officer might be attracted to instead of going to work for the State Department.
Well, I think we're probably unique in the sense that we have the problem that a very significant number of the highest ranks in the Foreign Service go to political appointees. So if you have a young person out there that has a lot of opportunities in the private sector, I think more of them today are probably thinking, well, why don't I go into the private sector, make a ton of money, make political contributions, and come back and be an ambassador without all of the hassle? I think that's a significant factor.
The talent level that is required at the entry, at the beginning stages of one's career as a Foreign Service officer, are the skills that are needed for that being developed at the same level of quality as they were in the past? Or is that part of the issue here too, that to find the quality people is becoming more of a needle in a haystack problem in the diplomatic community?
Well, I think, Francis, there's a lot to that. It's getting harder and harder to find those people, and it's not a quantitative metric. I'm sure that there's still 20,000 very capable, well-motivated young people taking the Foreign Service exam every year, and very few of them get through the complete process. Maybe 500 in a year, maybe more than that, depending on a lot of factors, and maybe as few as 200. But it's from an anecdotal and a subjective point of view, I think the view among the people that I'm in touch with is growing that we really are not getting the best and the brightest.
How much does the perception of the United States' position around the world and the opinion that other governments have of the United States government, how much does that play into this difficulty in attracting quality candidates in your view, Ambassador?
Well, I think that's a very good question, and I think that's an important point. And at least in the last half of the 20th century, which doesn't seem so far away to me anyway, there was a great deal of idealism based on the proposition that there are terrible problems in the world, and the United States has the resources and the will to solve those problems. And I think that that view of the world has been declining in parallel with the relative decline in America's power and influence. I don't think we're any less capable, either diplomatically or economically, financially or diplomatically, but others are much more capable than they were 50 years ago. And so the ability to impact the equations is probably lessening.
Ambassador Thomas Boyett is my guest. The Foreign Service is still an appealing career if so many people are taking the exam and so few are getting through. But the numbers that you threw out there kind of led to what I wanted to discuss next, and that is, what's the churn? Do we have a sense that people are leaving the Foreign Service to the extent that people are leaving service at other federal agencies, and that the need to fill spaces is as great as it's starting to become at some other agencies?
I don't think, Francis, you'd have to check with our personnel technicians to get accurate numbers. I'm not that close to what's happening. But I don't think that problem has reared its ugly head yet. But it may, because take one of the really secular problems throughout the entire federal service, civilian or military, accepted service or regular service, and that is the penetration down to the working level of politically appointed folks. There was a time when each agency had a secretary, a minister, and a couple of assistant secretaries, maybe half a dozen other politically appointed people, but now those numbers have skyrocketed in the last 10 or 20 years. The American Academy of Diplomacy, of which I'm a member, is doing a lot of work on this subject, and we're going to publish an analysis of what's been happening in the State Department and the Foreign Service probably in November. And I think that's going to be worth a read for you, Francis, because it goes into these questions in a great deal of detail. Just to give you one metric, and we've tried to measure from 74 to 14, from 1974 to 2014, 40 years. I was an active duty Foreign Service officer in 1974, and I know what that world was like. And I don't think today's world is anything like that in terms of the ability of the career people to, I don't want to say tell truth to power, because that's probably too dramatic, but the ability of the career people to make strong suggestions to their political masters as to what the policy should be and how they should be implemented. Well, if you have political appointees up and down the line, you know, who's going to tell the emperor that that he has no clothes, or she has no clothes? How is a George Kennan going to emerge in the world that we live in now? It's a lot harder, because there are many, many more political persons, and they are all patriots and good Americans and all of the rest of it, but their first loyalty is to the administration. It's not to some perhaps idealistic view of the realities, but it's very important to have experienced people around who can give them advice as to how the various policy ideas are going to play overseas. And if there are no Foreign Service officers in a position to impact that process, then American policy is in trouble.